If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. As we get closer and closer to college football. Yeah, this is the last week. I think I read a tweet earlier today. This is the last week without a college football game for like 4 months. Super cool. We've been waiting for it for a while, and it seems like it's been forever. I mean, it truly has. It seems like it's been forever. Of course, we didn't have a bowl game last year, so that's basically a month of football coverage you didn't get. You know, a lot of discussion about, you know, bowl practices and opponent previews and things like that. So we didn't have that, but here we are. Had the coaching change, obviously. We did okay. You know, I like Jeff Lebby. I like Jeff a lot. We're going to talk a little bit about his comments post-scrimmage in our first segment of the show. But before we get to all that, too, we'd like to welcome Lamar School left-handed pitcher Wes Pritchard to the Mississippi State roster. Wes was initially scheduled to go to East Central Community College, and spot opened up late. Mississippi State made a move. Wes is from a Mississippi State family. You always love that. I mean, truly, you do. I mean, even if it's Mississippi State, Ole Miss, or whatever. Like, I remember when Eli Johnson, you know, David Johnson's son. Of course, a kid named Eli from Oxford's an Ole Miss guy, right? I mean, come on, you know. But I think it's a great thing when young people get the opportunity to wear the school colors collegiately of the schools they grew up cheering for. And Wes said, you know what, Jake Mangum, Elijah McNamee, you know, loved that NAFL championship team, as we all do. But it's a cool thing. And so, late addition to the 2024 class, and State has added a few down the stretch, and not just from the portal. You know, of course, Charlie Foster, left-handed pitcher from Georgia, he's part of this. And now a left-handed pitcher from Lamar School and Pritchard. And so, happy for him. Had a chance to speak to him yesterday, his first public interview. About his commitment. It all kind of came in about 2 weeks. You know, as things kind of began to get down, you're like, hey, do we have some room here to add somebody else? And as I told you guys, too, I think we're officially done with the portal, barring something completely unforeseen. So you pick up Pritchard. And, again, a left-hander, 6'3", about 170 pounds. He probably needs a year in weight room. But you can never have enough left-handed pitching. And he is a guy that's a bit of a developmental guy, but had a nice jump with Velo this summer. Now he's throwing around 90-91, from the left-hand side. During the season, he was in the high 80s. And so you're starting to see kind of the natural development for him. And so we'll see how things go. But if I'm going to take somebody late from the high school ranks, I think I'm taking a left-handed pitcher. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but we certainly wish Wes the best. To say his family is excited is to overstate the obvious. A lot of pictures on the family's social media accounts of everybody kind of getting together at Davis Wade Stadium or Duty Noble Field. And so you love it, man. You do. And, again, it's good to see one of our own get a chance to represent us on the fields of play. I just think guys like that and young ladies like that that grow up cheering for Mississippi State, I just think maybe it means a little bit more. And that's not to be disrespectful to anybody else. I know, my oldest son played college baseball, didn't play at Mississippi State. But I know this. Had he had that opportunity, wearing that uniform would have never meant more to anybody than him. And I'm sure that's the same way that Wes's family feels about him. So, again, Congratulations to the Pritchards. You were already one of us, but now officially a Diamond Dog. And he will arrive this weekend. We also have a segment today, too. I just decided to do this right before the show. I was a little inspired yesterday to kind of give some welcome wagon type tips to our newest Bulldog students. We'll get to that later in the show. I got a few things I want to say about that. We may go a little bit longer today. We'll see how things go. Kind of got a surprising top 10 list for you, too. And so those are the things we're dealing with today. So again, congratulations to Wes Pritchard and welcome in Bulldog fans to the Boneyard. Now, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. I love them. I will partake in their fine cuisine at least once this week. Not sure what day I'm going to do it. Got a few things going on. We'll see. We'll see how things go. You never know. Might even break bread in Tupelo this week. You just never know where I'm going to be. But you know this, if I get a chance to go put my feet under the table at Bulldog Burger Company, I'm happy to do it. I love eating there. I do. And I love getting it to go, too. I told you guys, they've kind of made to-go orders a bit of an art form. And I love being able to get back to the spa or whatever, and I can still see the, you know, the smoke. You know what I mean? Like, you take that lid off, and you can see your food is still warm. That's an amazing thing. Nothing worse than getting a to-go order and immediately have to go grab it and put it in the microwave. I love eating at Bulldog Burger Company. I'm trying to think. I guess I had the comeback burger the last time. I might do that again. You know, it's only available for a limited time. I'm advocating that they put it on the menu full time. That's my plea to the staff at Bulldog Burger Company. I think this comeback burger is a winner. I think you guys should try it if you're a Bulldog Burger Company veteran and maybe you've had just about everything else on the menu. Let's encourage you to give this thing a shot. It's great. I love it. I absolutely do. And might even get it with onion rings this time. Got it with fries last time. But that's kind of what I'm leaning towards. And I know that my youngest won a promotion for pushing that burger. And I'm not saying that you got to, you know, go eat it because he works there. I'm just saying you go eat it because you need nutrition and you want to enjoy a great meal. He might not even be your server. But if he is, please tip generously. All that understood, there's three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's true. And we all need more of that. We all do. The older we get, the harder we need to work. Some of us are naturally beautiful. Some of us. The rest of us have to work at it. But I love going to the Bulldog Burger Company, and you should too. Plan a family night or a friend's night out soon, and let Bulldog Burger Company provide the nourishment for you and everybody around you. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's get into the Jeff Levy discussion. Being in the room again, like being in the Goldman family, or Golding family, media center, you know, it kind of made it more real for me. You know, it's one thing to be at practice and things like that, and you get an opportunity, you know, talk to players and coaches, you know, in the weight room. That's one thing. But to go sit in the media room at Davis Wade Stadium, it just made it a little more real to me. And it was kind of a journey. Yeah, it's moving weekend. And so some of the streets were closed. And I don't know anybody else's jobs. I'm not going to be hypercritical about that. But it was a challenge yesterday to get there. But we made it. I was the first one there, and I'm kind of having like tech guys on my team saying, "Hey, here's how you get there." But all that said, Coach Levy sat down and spoke with us. And one of the things that I enjoy about Coach Levy, I don't think he struggles with getting his point across, right? I think Jeff knows exactly what he wants to say and how to say it, and his message is one that gets out there. And one of the things that I liked about yesterday is there was a little more criticism. And I don't mean that I want a coach to go up there and throw the team under the bus. But I like honesty. And I understand that there's some things you want to kind of keep out of the general populace, right, until you get a little bit closer to the season. I mean, you're not going to go out there and say, "Hey, man, we're really struggling at this position." But I do like the fact that he's not so coach speaky. There's all coaches, there's a reason they call it coach speak. I mean, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that are going to say a whole lot and not tell you anything. But I thought yesterday that he kind of provided some insight, maybe that we haven't had as much. But I got the first question, and kind of asked him to give us an overview of the day. He said, the thing I like most, that we're both groups that did a better job of just playing the next play. And that's kind of a mantra we're used to. That's one of the things that Leach used to always say, play the next play, play the next play. When things weren't good, they found a way of settling back in. The next play is the only one that matters. I was proud of our guys for that because there was a great back and forth. There were really some great moments defensively, some offensively. Our leadership showed up when things weren't perfect on their side of the ball. We were able to get things back on track. I love hearing that. I love hearing it for a lot of reasons, right? I love being able to hear that you have players that are willing to kind of step up and say, you know what, hey, let's flush that and get on to the next thing. That's a big part of it, man. Get that done and get on to the next thing. Because one of the things, and I've said this on the show before too, when I coached high school baseball, one of the last things I did before we broke our huddle, before a ball game, as a guy, there's going to be at least three things happen today in the ball game, and they're going to go wrong. There's going to be at least three things go wrong today. When it happens, remember I told you that, and just move on to the next play. Because how many times do you see it, especially coaching young people? All of a sudden, something doesn't go our way, and we begin to pout. And you need somebody on the field to step up and say, okay, let's go. That's behind us. That's one of those three things we talked about in the pregame huddle. That's what leadership does. And people always talk about, you know, coaching, right? You know, and Leach always had the whole thing, you know, either you're allowing it to happen or you're coaching it, right? And some people try to use that as, use his own words to indict him later, which was silly. But all that understood, you need players that are balled in that kind of reinforce the vision and reinforce the fact that, hey, that's behind us. Let's go get the next one. Because how many times have you seen it? And you've seen it with Mississippi State baseball, basketball, football, everything. At some point, there may be an opponent that gets on a bit of a run, and we hadn't always been mentally tough enough to answer back or to stop their progress. And that's players. That's not coaching. That's players. And how many times have we seen it? I mean, we couldn't count them all. You know, I remember, you know, several years ago playing Kentucky in basketball. You know, it just seemed like they'd always have that big run, and right when it seemed like they were getting ready to pull away, State would find a way to get a big shot or get a big stop and things like that. It was kind of a tenet of the Stansberry era, you know, to be honest with you. And I give a lot of credit to Dan Mullen too. You know, you lean on your leaders. It's not a video game, right? You got to have people that are bought into what you're doing. And I think Jeff Levy has that here at Mississippi State. Levy was also very, very conscientious about not really like calling players out unless we asked specifically. It's like, hey, who kind of stood out? He didn't really want to identify people like that and kind of share their thoughts about that. You know, those are things that I kind of think about too. It's like, hey, we're basically halfway through camp, and I don't know if I want to put something out there in the media just yet. Hey, this guy is emerging, you know, because what does that do to the other guy? If we're in the middle of a competition, I want that competition to continue. I don't want to declare a victor in that competition until it's over. If I go out there and say, hey, you know, John Q. Bulldog's going to be our starting right guard, well, then another guy may, you know, he may back down on you. But it also kind of shows you, too, that maybe that's why he's running second. But I think by not naming players specifically, you keep the competition going, for sure. He talked too that, you know, kind of cleaning up pre-snap stuff. And I loved how he put this. We need to be disciplined, making sure that non-playing penalties have no part in our game. Truer words never spoken, right? You don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. You know, at times you're going to make an error, right? You're going to have a holding call. You may have a pass interference. There are going to be some things that happen in the flow of the game that are just kind of part of the game. But you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot. You got to give yourself a chance. You may have the perfect play call, and you go out there, and all of a sudden somebody moves early, and it blows the situation because it changes it down in distance. Now, all of a sudden, we got to go to a different play call. And maybe that doesn't fit, you know, the defense that we're facing pretty well. Maybe our pre-snap read is different. So you can't go out there and make life hard on yourself. I mean, there's always going to be some physical errors. But by and large, pre-snap penalties are traditionally mental errors. We want to eliminate that. I think Coach is absolutely correct there. You all see it the same way I do. I asked him, too, about the two deep. You know, how close are you to kind of finalizing the two deep? He probably won't do that until we get in the game week. Kind of expected that answer. Again, because, again, you don't want to tip your hand, even if you've maybe identified some guys. But you also want to make guys earn it. You don't want anybody coasting these final 2 weeks of camp. You want them to compete at a high level. As he mentioned, there's a ton of opportunity between now and then. We've got a lot of guys on campus that got here in June, right? Devin Booth's one of those. Most of the team was here in the spring, but there are guys who got here in June that need reps, know exactly what we have, so that we're putting the right guys on the bus every trip, whether at home or going on the road, making sure we had the right guys to execute and play clean. Yeah, I love hearing that. Because how many times do we go through this, right? You really want guys to be here for the spring to have the opportunity, of course, to kind of absorb the offense and then have the summer to kind of work through the nuances with their teammates and kind of hit the ground running in fall camp. And you had some other guys that showed up for workouts that didn't get the benefit of spring camp. But it's like, hey, we're not going to discount that. We're going to just go ahead and say, okay, hey, this is it. You know, and there's a reason you bring these guys in the spring portal. You know, Trent Hughes, another one of those guys. Trent Hudson, excuse me. But you want those guys to get out there, and you have to see what they do when the bullets are flying, right? You got to put them in game-type situations. One of the things that we talked about, and had a young lady stop me in Walmart yesterday and said, hey, I love what you said about the offensive line. I wasn't just talking about that for the fun of it. And so specifically yesterday, Levy was asked, how do you feel about the offensive line group? This kind of verifies our reporting. Levy said, I think the group has taken great strides since we ended spring ball. Maybe the group that's made the most improvement as it continued to get better. Appreciate their spirit and work ethic and toughness and their camaraderie. They're a tight group for a bunch of guys who haven't been knowing each other for a long time. You'd never know it. Cody's done an incredible job with that room. That's been huge for us. That's what you want to hear. Like, as great as maybe I made you feel on that Saturday show about the things that I was hearing from the offensive line, now you've heard it from the big whistle. Yeah, I'll give you some inside information, but you've got official confirmation right here that your offensive line is playing well. And that's what you want to hear, right? Because that is a very, very difficult proposition. You bring in, you know, basically four new guys to help formulate a starting five, and then here you are middle of camp, and that group's getting, yeah, the most praise in many respects. Another thing that I really like, I think John Sokoloff asked this question from WCBI, I think. I may misattribute this, but I think it was John. But John said, you know, talked about how important it is to have a quarterback that shares your vision, that shares everything that you've kind of got going on, that understands what you expect out of the quarterback position, what you expect from the offense, what the concepts were. And the look on Jeff's face, I thought, really kind of said it all. And you can go watch that video for free over at jeanspage.com. It's attached to our Levy Q&A, but you can also find it under featured videos. But he kind of smiled and he says, absolutely. There's no guesswork in that. That's a definite. Is there a more important answer in this press conference or any press conference than that one? That we have identified the quarterback that absolutely fits what we want to do offensively, and that our coach, who is also our play caller, is absolutely on the same page as the quarterback. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. I loved it. He didn't expand upon the answer. He didn't need to. Again, I think his face said it all. Pretty impressive with that. I also asked Coach a little bit about tempo, you know, about conditioning. You know, kind of, you know, we're going to run some tempo with a bunch of guys that hadn't run tempo. They had those 15 practices in the spring. Of course, they had the benefit of, you know, summer workouts. So, you know, how are we picking this thing up, you know? And again, Levy, honest. Offensively, we have a long way to go. We have to get a lot better. understanding how to play with firm feet and the cleanliness with how we have to play. Just because you play fast doesn't mean it's sloppy. The detail and the execution is where it ends, and at the end of the day, we have to play with great detail. If you can execute, you can use tempo as an edge. I have a ton of confidence that we're going to get there, but it's not about the first 11. The next 11 are just as important in the league that we play in. Number one, I appreciate the honesty, but I also understand what he's trying to articulate here when he talks about we have to have everybody involved that can perform up to this standard. Second team, third team, everybody's got to be able to do it because you never know when somebody may get banged up, have to come out for a few plays, and we're trying to put together a decisive game to take a lead or put a game away. And we can't have a guy that's been on the sidelines come in and not be fully skilled when it comes to what we want to do tempo-wise. I think everybody kind of sees that for what it is. And so if all of a sudden we have a running back or a lineman or somebody that gets a little bit banged up, and if they're not up to par, if they're not meeting the foundational standard, it changes how we play, how we call plays. There's certain things you can't do. You can't run tempo with guys that can't run tempo. We talk about
at Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Those pre-snap penalties. You know how important that is? You know, you got to get everybody up there. We talk about the firm feet. Hey, we got to go up there. We got to get set. We got to be set for a beat, right, before we snap the football. And how many times do you see it where they snapped the ball before everybody was set? It's an important aspect of it. And so, again, appreciate the forthright answer from Coach there. But absolutely love the fact that Coach is like, hey, we've made some progress there, but we're not quite up to where we want to be. We know what our standards. How many coaches in that situation would have said, we're getting there. We're getting there. But he didn't. And I don't think he's just, talking to the team. I think this is a situation where he's just kind of assessing where things are and being honest about it. And I think when we get him in a post-game press conference situation, I think he'll be honest too. I don't think he throws players under the bus, but I don't think he's going to sit here and just kind of give you what you want to hear. Another question, and we'll talk about some of this later in the week, how's the defensive line coming along? They're doing a good job. We have guys that are practicing the right way. We need more. That's the expectation. Up front, we've got to be able to roll guys and play multiple guys. And these are my comments here. That's really a challenge right now. We got numbers, but we don't have a lot of experience depth. And we got some guys out there who played some ball, but to play in the Southeastern Conference, there's a different level of intensity and emotion, right? Back to Lovey's comments. Last thing you want is a guy has played 55 or 60 snaps. That doesn't bode well for success, specifically in our league. We have to have guys playing at the same level throughout. It's all about building depth. And again, as we talked before, I think on the interior, we're going to have the depth that we need to be successful. Calvin Dinkins, you expect some big things from him. Trevion Williams, absolutely incredible player, but it just hadn't come together due to injuries for both of those guys. And you go out and you get Paca and you get, Bingley Jones, and you expect those guys to be two deepers. And so, and again, we're going to talk about this more on the show later in the week. But I'm just still a little concerned about the edges. Do we have somebody that can really be a game wrecker from the edge? DeMonte Russell could be, but there's not a lot of guys you look at and say, hey, this guy is a surefire pre-snap read nightmare. You don't have that. You don't have a Montez Sweat, and you rarely ever do at Mississippi State. I mean, there's a reason the guy was a first rounder. I like the fact that we have some pieces. We got to figure some things out. And there's some things that we can probably do schematically to generate some pass rush there. It's not just going to be about an edge rusher. Not just going to be about a guy in a two-point stance lining up as a seven technique and just, trying to play track and just get outside that left tackle shoulder and get a clear path to the quarterback. It's not going to be that simple. I just don't know if we have the personnel in that respect, you know, to really kind of make people uncomfortable. We're going to have to do some things schematically, I think, with our backers, bring some pressure from some spots people aren't expecting. And and I'll be honest with you, I'm just going to kind of say it for what it is. You know, one of my biggest concerns about this defense is, you know, Coleman Hutzler, who I think is a bright guy and will do a good job for us. This is a guy that is coming to us from Alabama. I don't know, and this will sound like I'm poor mouthing State. I don't mean to. But when you're running Alabama schemes and you don't have Alabama's talent, where does that leave you? When you sign, you know, arguably, you know, you're 25 from the top 100 players in the country every year, you know, you don't have to do a lot schematically. If I've got the top 25 players and you got the leftovers, I don't have to coach too hard because I have more talent. We always talk about it. It's about Jimmys and Joes and not always X's and O's. And so that's really, you know, that's what I'm eager to see. You know, defense doesn't change a whole lot. You know, offenses change a lot. There's always some new innovation. There's not a lot of change on defense. I mean, you're still kind of reading the same keys, you know, watching the eye candy and things like that. I mean, there's some things you do. There's some foundational standards that are going to be the same on defense no matter what alignment that you're in. But when I think about, you know, hey, one of the things that kind of made us unique in years, recent years, and even maybe the last 10 years, is, you know, we were a team that kind of got after the quarterback. You know, we had the old psycho defense stuff. It was fun for a while. Zach Arnett, of course, would bring pressure from everywhere. You know, we were, you know, crazy defensive alignment at times. You never knew where we were coming from, how we did our twist and things of that nature. We would change your blocking scheme. You'd have a week to kind of get ready for us, and we were going to come at you with something you hadn't seen. There was always going to be some opponent-specific pressures. And so I'm just kind of curious to see how we're going to handle that. You know, that to me, that's the biggest concern. But when I hear some things, you know, I hear that our secondary and our linebackers have really played well, and to hear Coach Lebby say, hey, they're doing a good job, I think we feel good about the first group, and we got to get a comfort level with that second group. And God forbid, we got to stay healthy. We cannot afford an injury. We got some young guys out there, obviously, that need to take the next step in their development, provide some depth for us. But you know, we can ill afford an injury. I would say within that group, that's probably the one group that we absolutely cannot have somebody have a serious injury. And that is a group at times that is rather injury prone due to the nature of the game that they play. It's a tough, tough deal playing defensive line in the Southeastern Conference. That's important to understand. And so, you know, I'm a little concerned, you know, defensive line recruiting right now too. I think we're going to have to hit the portal hard again this year. And that's the problem that we're having too, is like, you know, the portal, once these three techs get in the portal, and there's a reason, even out of high school, like you'll see some defensive tackle from your local high school and you're like, man, Alabama, LSU, and Georgia offered this guy. Because there's not a lot of those guys out there. When you can find a quick twitch guy that can play a three tech or play a shade, or, you know, everybody wants them. That's why you see those offer sheets sometimes will have 25, 30 offers on them, and you think, holy smokes, I didn't think the guy was that good. Well, he's that good because he plays a position of need. And so when you get in the portal, it's like 10 times that on steroids. And so, you know, maybe we have to hit the junior college ranks here. And one of the things, too, I talked to one of our coaches recently, he made a great point about that. You know, the gap facility-wise now between junior colleges and, you know, Power 4 or Power 5 or whatever programs you want to call them these days are so substantial. You know, you've got some guys out there, they're doing a good job in junior college. It's true. But the off-season conditioning and things of that nature, it's just at a different level in the Southeastern Conference, and it takes a while for those guys to acclimate. I think the best case, really, and things are much different now with the portal, but there are still some guys out there. There are some D1 bounce backs that go to junior college for one reason or another, usually academic, right? And so I think you got to find some guys like that, because it really becomes a bidding war when you get in the portal. And so we got to adjust. We got to find a way to kind of get around that, do what we need to do to ensure that we have the guys that we need that are capable of competing at a high level of proficiency in the Southeastern Conference. But yeah, if you ask me right now, and I'm a huge David Turner fan, as most people are, right? But that's the group that probably concerns me the most, right, is the defensive line. Again, we're going to talk about that later in the week, but it was good to hear Levy kind of speak on that topic yesterday. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. And you think, you know what, Steve, I don't know that I need a friend in the mortgage industry. Well, yes, you do. If you want to have the dream of home ownership come true for you, Blair's your guy. Now, you can visit him at his website, or, because we're friends, I can give you his number. 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Here's the deal, guys. Blair closes Boneyard listener loans on the regular. We've had several of you guys have great success with Blair when maybe you've had some issues with other people. You need to put 23 years of experience to work for you. This is a guy that knows how to structure loans. They're going to be enticing to underwriters because he understands the guidelines. It's not rocket science, but you know what? If it was, he would be at the top of that field too. Yeah, top 1% close ratio in the country, back-to-back-to-back years. Reach out, let him know your needs. Will you looking to buy a game day condo, which may prove to be more affordable than you think? Are you looking for a home for the very first time? Maybe you've been on the hamster wheel of renting, making somebody else some money. Why not put your money to work for you and build some equity in a home? That way you've got something to leave your children someday. You never know. Closeblair.com. Okay, now this is going to be an interesting topic, and it may be somewhat surprising coming from me. Our top 10 list today. We'll get to it shortly, but I wanted to talk about Kurt Cobain today. While I am not a fan of Nirvana's music, I think what happened in Kurt Cobain's life is tragic, and not, I don't just mean, you know, his ultimate demise. But Kurt Cobain is a guy that, really, to be honest with you, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due because there was a vacuum in music, and those guys were a part of filling it. Part of my disdain for Nirvana is because so many people give them credit for things they didn't do, right? I mean, that's the truth. There've been a lot of things attributed to them that just didn't happen. There's a revisionist history about a lot of that. You know, people don't, you know, they don't know the full history of music, and that it is, they know it Smells Like Teen Spirit. So they think, hey, this was the song that changed everything. Guys, music was already changing, and it wasn't organic. Despite what MTV tried to make you think, it wasn't organic. The 80s hair metal scene had gotten very bloated and very cookie cutter, and so corporate rock America decided we needed to make a change. They did. They wouldn't play the early 90s metal videos on MTV in rotation. And it's interesting, too, when you begin to look at the demise of MTV. It was really that decision. That decision where they basically became advocates for change in an industry that had made everybody rich. And so rather than continuing to feed the golden goose, it's like, hey, you know what? We're going to change this. You know, we're tired of all these guys getting all the girls. We want some girls too. And so we're going to change all this. And they did. And in many respects, it failed. I mean, MTV now is basically 24 hours of ridiculousness. The Jersey Shore and hair care commercials. That's what it is. You can still find MTV Classic out there and see some cool stuff, but it's not because of the fact that I'm angsty because 80s metal ended. That was going to happen anyway, right? And Pearl Jam and Soundgarden are some of my favorite bands of all time. I went to all those shows. Loved it. I liked the new blood. I didn't like Nirvana. And one of the things, too, about Nirvana, too, that a lot of people don't fully appreciate, a lot of people are like, oh, he was a lyrical genius. Kurt Cobain, by his own admission, did not like writing lyrics. And so he kind of did it phonetically, right? So you'd write the music first and then just kind of hum it out, you know, just kind of sound it out. And so he just kind of picked words at random that kind of rhymed. So there wasn't always a lot of storytelling. I mean, the song Polly is a true story, and probably one of the better written songs that Kurt Cobain did. But so people forget this, that the whole Nirvana experience only lasted about 3 years. Because let's be honest about this, none of you knew about Bleach. You didn't know anything about it. You didn't know anything about Sub Pop unless you read it in Rolling Stone. There was no Nirvana hype or buzz until Nevermind came out in 91. And they exploded. They did. And really on the strength of that song, Smells Like Teen Spirit, you know, which was kind of a joke about the old deodorant. Maybe you've forgotten that analogy there, but it's true. But he ended up meeting up with Courtney Love in May of 91 at a punk show out west. And the next thing you know, they're seen regularly, and she had done some acting and things of that nature. And they decided to get married. I guess it's in February of 92, so really in less than a year, they decided to make the move. Kim Gordon, the bass player in Sonic Youth, told Courtney Love, "Do not marry Kurt Cobain. He will ruin your life. He will destroy your life." And I think in the end, they were kind of a Bonnie and Clyde of, in many respects, of chemical substance abuse. I think everybody realizes that. And I'm trying to say this with as much respect as I can. I don't want you to think I'm just sitting here hating on this guy. Because, again, he got aboard a roller coaster that didn't have any brakes. And I think in many respects that the music industry killed Kurt Cobain. Not necessarily Kurt himself, or not Courtney Love, as some people have alleged. And I don't believe that. I think there are some people that were complicit in his death, but maybe weren't responsible for pulling a trigger, if that makes sense. But I flash forward a little bit here. You know, the In Utero album, and if you do your research about this and you don't just read all the Nirvana fan sites out there, you can find this out. The record company nearly shelved In Utero. There's some people that dispute that, but that's not factual. Right? And so the record company was so overextended with the advance and everything else, and I think they had three or four producers before they finally settled on some, and they wanted to re-record some stuff, and Kurt was very combative. And the truth of the matter is, and I've read books on the topic too, Kurt really wanted to be the band that did Bleach, right? That's what he wanted. He did not want to be, you know, the next Guns N' Roses or Metallica. He didn't want that stuff. Now, he wanted to be famous, by his own admission, and a lot of people said, oh, you know, he was this torture genius. No, he wanted the money and the fame that went with it, but he didn't want it. He kind of wanted it on his terms. Chris Novoselic has said as much in interviews in the last few years. No, he absolutely wanted to be famous, despite some of the comments that some people have made. They've made him out to be some modern-day Socrates, and of that he is not. But I want to flash forward to 94, because things are really running off the rails. And listen, to be fair, there was no way, no way they were ever going to replicate the success of Nevermind. And In Utero, I think in some respects, is a better album. I do. But in March of 94, they were out in Europe doing some European tour dates and what they considered the first suicide attempt took place on March the 1st. And, excuse me, I'm getting ahead of myself. So he was diagnosed with an illness, and we can put that in Dr. Evil quotes. He was diagnosed with an illness on March 1st. And then on March the 3rd, Courtney Love says that she found him overdosed on Rohypnol and champagne. Stayed in the hospital for, I don't know, 5-6 days, traveled back to Seattle, and things continued to really have this downward spiral. So less than 2 weeks later, after returning to Seattle, the cops were called to Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love's home. They found Cobain locked in a room, and of course Courtney called 911 saying he was suicidal and he had a gun. And I believe that 911 call is still out there available on YouTube if you want to find it. It sounds legit to me. They go and talk to Kurt, and he goes, "No, I'm trying to get away from her, you know. I'm locking myself in this room to get away from her." And so that kind of led to some of that speculation, too, about the tumultuous relationship and that maybe she had a hand in his passing away. And again, I don't believe that. I think indirectly she did. I don't think that she killed him, as some people allege. On March 25th, Kurt Cobain went through an intervention. And that tells me that this is not just a Courtney Love thing, right? If Courtney Love is the only person here that is making these allegations, right? It would kind of lead me to believe that, hey, you know, maybe she wanted the money. I don't know. You know, maybe she wanted him out of her life. But a lot of his bandmates and people involved with the record company, so other people participated in this intervention. So clearly they saw some self-destructive behavior. There was a lot of talk, too, that Nirvana was about to break up. That Kurt was tired of being in a public eye. He just kind of wanted everything to stop. And I believe there is some truth to that. I believe, again, this whole thing was running off the rails. And he had lost control of it. He had no privacy. I think, you know, it's one of those things, be careful what you wish for. He got it. And I think in the end, he wanted to return it. After the intervention, it took a few days. He enrolled for detox out in L.A. Lasted less than 24 hours. He AMA'd. And ironically, it's so funny, and I say funny as in ironic rather than funny, ha-ha. See, boards of plenty in Seattle, and also sitting in first class with him was Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses. And then you maybe remember in the VMAs that Nirvana and GNR had some issues. And like after this silly performance that you know, Chris Novoselic throws his bait in the air and wears it off the forehead, and Dave Grohl gets off the drums and runs up and says, "Hi, Axl, hi, Axl." And then here we are in the, you know, in the crisis moment of the Kurt Cobain story. He's on a plane home with Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses. And Duff was later quoted as saying that, "Hey, I knew something was wrong. I knew something was wrong. I tried to help. Wish I could have done more." But it's funny how life works out. You know, Duff McKagan, after everything that had been said and done, and the you know, the vitriol that Nirvana had thrown at Guns N' Roses and others of the era, it had been easy for Duff McKagan to completely ignore it. But he tried to help. And you can read and see a lot of interviews out there about every bit of that. So that's all March 31st. And then you get into the month of April, and it didn't last long, right? They believed that Kurt Cobain killed himself on April 5th. His body wasn't found until the 8th. And he left a suicide note, of course, and said, "I haven't felt any joy in music in many years." Of course, it's funny, too, in many years. It's 94. Nevermind comes out in 91. And to me, that kind of lends itself to that whole thing about, again, Nevermind was not the record he wanted to write. It's really unfortunate. It really is. And you know, addicts are the best liars, man. And but the thing about this timeline that kind of gets to me a little bit is all these people met on March 25th and had an intervention. And then less than a week later, he AMAs from treatment and comes back to Seattle. And nobody knew? Nobody? You don't think that somebody got a call when he AMA'd from treatment? You don't think somebody in the management group or the record company or the family or the friends, nobody knew, and he's left alone? And then 5 days later, he kills himself? There's just something about that that doesn't make sense to me. It truly does. And again, you know, I enjoy a good mystery, but in this one, you know, a guy that means a lot to a lot of people killed himself. And, or that's the allegation anyway. But anyway, so today's top 10 list are songs about Courtney Love, because a lot of people don't like her. And it's not just because of her relationship from Kurt Cobain, and we're going to go quickly with this, but her relationship with Trent Reznor and other people, there's a lot to it that people don't like her. And even though that, you know, maybe she didn't pull the trigger, there are a lot of people that feel like that, hey, you know, the relationship between the two of them kind of pushed a guy that was already on the edge over the edge. And so they blame her for his death. At the end of the day, we're all ultimately responsible for how we live our lives and what we choose to do with them. But there are a lot of people very angsty about her. So we're going to go through this really quickly. I'm not going to give you any insight. I'm just going to give you the list so we can move forward here. Number 10, a band that I'm not really a big fan of, but they, Primus, they wrote a song called Coattails of a Dead Man, and that's pretty pretty pithy in and of itself. Tracy Bonham, number 9. Love Tracy Bonham. If you don't, ladies, if you love a good female rocker and you haven't listened to The Burdens of Being Upright, that's the one you need to listen to. Tracy Bonham, nominated for a Grammy as well. It's Kisses. Kisses, song is about Courtney Love. Number 8, Tori Amos, Professional Widow. A very scathing song that has been openly admitted to being about Courtney Love. And a lot of it's because of the fact that you know, the relationship between Tori Amos and Trent Reznor kind of dissolved because of Courtney Love, allegedly. Number 7, Smashing Pumpkins. Now, Courtney Love says that the entire Siamese Dream album is about her, with one rare exception. But the one great track off the Melancholy and Infinite Sadness album from Smashing Pumpkins, Where Boys Fear to Tread, also about Courtney Love. Number 6, Stone Temple Pilots, Too Cool Queenie. And that's a really, really cool song with a really cool vibe if you don't know it. Number 5, New Radicals, You Get What You Give. They even mentioned Courtney Love specifically in that song. Number 4, Trent Reznor, this song has been openly discussed. It's a song called Star Effers Incorporated. It's a PG-13 show, so we're not going to say the song title, but some people kind of falsely attributed that song to be about Marilyn Manson when Trent Reznor and Marilyn were not really in good spirits. But Trent has come out and said that some of the song is about Courtney Love. Number 3, one of our favorites, we love her to death. It's Gwen Stefani's Hollerback Girl. And Courtney Love had made some very critical comments about Gwen Stefani in the media. This was her answer to that. So a diss track in many respects. Number 2, a song that Kurt Cobain himself admitted was about Courtney Love. And I don't know that you would consider a slam, right? But it's Heart-Shaped Box. You know, and he said some of that kind of was inspired by her being pregnant with Francis Bean. Number 1, though, and he denied it for, I don't know, nearly 20 years. But Dave Grohl finally admitted that Foo Fighters' great song, I'll Stick Around, is about Courtney Love. There was a lot of fighting at the end of, you know, the termination of Nirvana and that big enterprise and the whole rat, I don't owe you anything. Every bit of that is directed at her. So that's your top 10 list today. But I wanted to give a little backstory about that, too. And again, there's so many people that you say, well, you know, Steve, you just hate Kurt Cobain. That's not true. That's not true. I just don't think he's nearly as talented as some people make him out to be. Now, it's perfectly okay with me if you love Kurt Cobain and his music. I just didn't get it. But as a guy that has struggled with chemical dependency and depression, I certainly have some empathy in my heart for him and for the people that love him. But again, I think there's so much mystery about this, and I have read about this extensively. It's one of those things, too, you can go down such a rabbit hole. You can, like, late at night, whatever, and you can't sleep, you get on your phone or your computer and you sit down and you just, like, look for all these articles about Kurt Cobain's death. And it's amazing some of the allegations that are out there. It truly is. But I think at the end of the day that you had a guy that was fragile emotionally even before he was famous. And I think he found a way to find some meaning in the world and put together a little trio, and things were great, and they recorded Bleach. And I think the truth of the matter is, I think he would have been happy if that's kind of where it ended, or if they just kind of hung around the Pacific Northwest and just kind of played gigs and things like that. I mean, again, he was a guy that had it was complications with him, for sure. And then all of a sudden, they find lightning in a bottle. And anyway, in many respects, kind of a corporate sellout, and people don't like to hear that, but it's true. You know, he was part of all of this new MTV and corporate rock movement. And some, for some reason, people have a tough time admitting that. And I think a lot of it's because it challenges your own ideal of what you think he was. And I think at the end of the day, it's maybe all in the eye of the beholder, but that's fine too. But that's your top 10 list for today. Songs about Courtney Love, none of them flattering. And again, I think it's, again, you go back and you look at that segment of time, like people, there are a lot of people out there that like Nirvana was like Led Zeppelin or something. And no, they weren't. They weren't, you know, and they weren't the Sex Pistols either. And so there's a lot to it. It's a lot to unpack, but I saw that reel just yesterday. And that's what kind of got me on this line of thinking. So we had to push some things back on the top 10 list, some ideas that we've kind of been kicking around. But I saw Dave Grohl talking about this and thought, hey, let's put this thing together. Roy, who has now been promoted to the assistant to the regional manager for Boneyard Enterprises. Yeah. And those of you that know the office get it. So there's a promotion. There is no raise. There is no increase benefits, but there is the promotion, the title itself. Roy Samanti, now officially the assistant to the regional manager of Boneyard Enterprises. If you have ideas, hit up our assistant to the regional manager on Twitter at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And maybe just push that follow button. He's not going to be tweeting a bunch. He's not going to be flooding your feed with like his food, you know, his latest clothing purchases and things like that. He's not that kind of guy. And you can find our great list on Spotify under that great handle. But thanks for your support, as always, of the Top 10 List. You can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution, right? I love Campus Bookmart, and you do too. If you've ever frequented that establishment, I know that you're going to be a returned customer because they have the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise in the known universe. So when you're looking for Mississippi State gear, looking for clothing, looking for decorative items, look no further than Campus Bookmart. Go by and see their smiling faces. You'll be glad you did. If you can't make it to town, and we always encourage you to shop Starkville, even if you are living in the mission field out there beyond the state lines of the great state of Mississippi, I know you want to help support a Starkville institution. Visit Campus Bookmart online at campusbookmart.net. They keep their online store updated. I would encourage you to follow them on social media as well. So when new items hit the shelf, you get a notification. You can go by and check it out as you do your online shopping. We'll give you some incentive to do so. Again, visit them at campusbookmart.net. Promo code BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That'll get you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. All right, I told you guys, kind of teased this a little bit. I don't know. Move-in day is always kind of nostalgic for me. I love the fact that we have new Bulldogs coming to town. I think it's a super cool thing. And so I wrote some things yesterday. I want to talk about that a little bit and kind of expand on it just a little bit. The first thing that I wrote about is, you know, college is not for everybody. It's true. It's not. It doesn't mean that you can't make it. It may require some effort on your part that maybe you haven't exerted before. But as somebody who has, you know, at times struggled in life without a college degree, I'm the only one in my family that doesn't have one, right? And I mean, you know, my wife has multiple degrees, and I've got, you know, my oldest son has a degree. Both of my girls have degrees, and my youngest is a sophomore at State now. But you can make it in the world without a college degree. But it has been some real challenges for me at times not having that degree. I've had to work harder than a lot of people, my peers. And so there are a few things I wanted to share because I think it's important once you enroll in college that you stay in there and hang in there and finish this thing. One of the first things I talked about yesterday is don't run out and go get a dog. Because you don't know what your calendar is going to look like. Like, I mean, you're at home now. It's like you kind of know your schedule. And maybe you have a dog. Or maybe you live off campus. But give yourself some time to acclimate to college. Because if you go and get a dog, you're not going to be able to spend the time with them you ordinarily could. And they may end up in a dog shelter. If in the event that you have to get a dog or feel like you're ready to get a dog, let me encourage you to adopt, not shop. We got several great animal shelters, including the Humane Society here in town that does a great job. I'd even encourage you, if you have some time, maybe even go volunteer at one of our local shelters. Second thing, guys, there is a Walmart neighborhood market just off campus. So So if you just need to go get a couple things for dinner, you need to go get some drinks, some adult beverages, whatever, if you're of legal drinking age, even with that, I encourage moderation. Rather than get in 12, get on Highway 12, because here's what happens. Every year, everybody comes back to campus, and so like a GPS will tell you that get to Walmart, you got to take 12, right? And then everybody says, hey, I know it's up here on the right. And so we basically have a conga line from campus all the way to Walmart in the right-hand lane. And everybody's well-intended, but you can save yourself a lot of time and trouble and stop traffic from getting congested on 12. It's just go north out there to 82 and come around at 25. And you know what? The very first red light there once you get on 12 is Walmart. Save yourself some time and trouble. And if you don't need to go to the big Walmart, if you just need some groceries, go to neighborhood market. Okay? Little travel tip for you. Plan your time very carefully. There is going to be a lot of social activities you're going to get invited to. We have some great watering holes here in town. Great places you can go shoot some pool, hang out, hear some live music, dance with your friends. We want you to be able to enjoy that. And there's going to be all kinds of things. They're going to be scheduled. There's going to be, you know, there's luau night. There's going to be this trivia question. And there's going to be all kind of stuff that you, it's going to, you know, be worth going out for. Don't let college get in the way of your education. Not only will your parents appreciate that, you'll appreciate that as you get older and get ready to apply for jobs. And you want to be able to get through with college with as much knowledge as you can, but with a very good education. If you didn't register for True Maroon Camp, you might be able to do so. True Maroon Camp is great. My kids have absolutely loved it. There are friends they met at True Maroon Camp that are still friends of theirs to this day. It's a great time. University does an amazing job with that. I encourage you to be a part of that. And if you're thinking about coming to state next year as an incoming freshman, you know, parents, let me encourage you. If you don't know much about True Maroon Camp, you need to, okay? One of the things that our football players find out pretty quickly is we don't drive to class here. There's usually somebody from football out there to say, hey, where are you going? I'm going to class. Well, now you got to walk. So get some comfortable walking shoes and understand, plan out your route, because we have more drivers than we have parking passes, and we have more parking passes than we have parking spaces. And some people complain about that. That is life in the big city, okay? Not to mention, I know that a lot of people feel like that they should be in a situation where everything is at their convenience. This is a valuable lesson for you. Also gives you a chance to get a bit of exercise. You'll be glad you did. You're going to be walking everywhere. And this, thankfully, we're not a huge campus. We're a nice big campus, but it's pretty easy to kind of get around. Now, one of the things that I want to impress upon people too, and listen to me and listen to me well. If you don't hear anything else in this segment of the show, listen to this. I got four sisters. I got a mom, a stepmom. I was raised by my grandmother and my aunt until my mom got remarried. And I've got two daughters. And I got a lot of friends that got daughters, and they always are so terrified about letting their daughters go to college because of the things that happen off campus. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say this is germane to Mississippi State. It's not. It happens at every college town in the country. But young men, as an old guy, you know, I got more life behind me than I got in front of me. But one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to respect women, and we're not going to allow them to be disrespected in our presence. That's what part of being a gentleman is. I know a lot of people out there, they preach all this other stuff to you, and here's the reality of that. Okay, I want to make sure everybody gets this. I always feel an obligation to all women when it comes to going out. Even to this day, and I haven't been out in a while, now that we're running this spa, and you ought to go float anyway, 662-268-7601, True Rest of Starkville, yes. But when I go out, I do, like, me and the homie Sam Denton went to Memphis to see Faster Pussycat and Ellie Guns a couple years ago, and you know, you meet a lot of people. You know, it's like you're concert friends, right? And there were some people that we met, and we were hanging out with my buddies in Faster Pussycat, and they were a little bit inebriated. I stayed with them until they got into an Uber home. And then shortly after that happens, we see a lady that is highly intoxicated. and had lost her group. And we waited with her until we got her into an Uber that we paid for. And I say that because the last thing that I would ever want to be a part of is just kind of looking the other way and then some young lady or older lady be victimized. I can't. I feel like we have an obligation to all women to ensure that they get home safely. And so part of that, college guys, is when you go to a bar, you watch their drinks. You look out for them. If somebody's hassling them, you step in. I'm not saying you got to come to fisticuffs, but you got to let people know, hey, listen, hey, she's with us, even if she's not. There are a lot of people out there that want to victimize young ladies. And so there's a burden and a responsibility for the men in bars, the men in their lives, to ensure that that doesn't happen. Sexual assault is an epidemic in our country. And so we need to do our part to ensure that we protect women. And listen, I get it. I got a bunch of strong women in my life. And they'll say, hey, you know, I can protect myself. The truth of the matter is, in some situations, you cannot. Despite your best intentions, there are some people out there that are just wizards at this wickedness. And so we, as men and gentlemen, have a responsibility to help look out for these people. And we do it lovingly. We do that out of respect. Because we don't want any young lady, and any older lady, a lady of any age, to be victimized, ever. Be a part of our sports programs. I'm encouraging you to do that. Get your student tickets. There's a lot of fun. You know, years ago, people used to kind of camp out and wait to get basketball tickets and things like that. You're going to make some memories. They're going to last you a lifetime. You never know when something amazing is going to happen. I think about over my own lifetime. I said, I remember I was there when Mississippi State beat the Bear. I was 8 years old, but I was there. I was there on the sidelines when Mississippi State beat Auburn to go to number one in the country. I was there. Mississippi State won the NAFL championship in baseball. Right? You want those memories for yourself. You're going to get older one day and you're going to say, you know what? Hey, wish I was been there. There's a reason that they give you guys discounted tickets. It's because we want you there. You are the future of our fan base. Learn our traditions. Respect our campus. Respect our history. If you need to learn some history, I got some books out there for you. Academically, let me tell you this. Every curriculum has challenging moments. You're going to take some classes you don't like. And maybe you don't give your best effort. I'm not one of those kinds of people that's very analytical when it comes to chemistry and mathematics and things like that. It just doesn't interest me. But part of that is the curriculum. You got to find a way to get through that and put your best foot forward. Don't just go in there with a half-measured effort and say, I just need to get a C or a D in this class to move forward. You never know where life is going to take you and where that knowledge may prove to be useful for you. And maybe you don't know what you want to major in yet. And that's okay, but you need to figure it out sooner rather than later. You don't want to be 3 years into it and decide, hey, I think I want to go do this. It happens, and then all those classes are transferable to another field of study. So make sure you know what you want to do. Don't be a professional student. One of the things that I am a big proponent of is that when you become a Bulldog, you are a Bulldog for life. Now, of course, we don't have a transfer portal for fans. If we did, I would put some of ours in it. And that's a joke. The ones that I would want to put in there probably wouldn't even get an offer from Delta State. All that understood, this should be some of the greatest years of your life. Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't think they're going to be the best years. They're going to be some of the best years, especially of young adulthood, because you're going to grow up and become more independent. You're going to become more worldly. And you're going to have a lot of people out there feeding you a lot of information that maybe conflicts with your values. And I want to tell you to listen to that too. And maybe not absorb it, you know. But I think it's important as a young people for us to kind of challenge our value system a little bit and kind of figure out who we are and what we truly believe. I believe that in the foundation of family. But I think as an individual, you have to make sure, am I just repeating the same lines that I've been told because I've been brainwashed or because I really believe it? So I think it's okay to challenge yourself a little bit. And that's going to happen a lot politically. And there's going to be a lot of people out there that make compelling cases that make a lot of sense that are wrong. And maybe not wrong when we say right or wrong, but they may be wrong based on your value system. There are a lot of people that are very passionate about things that we don't agree with. And I am a live and let live person. But I'm not going to change the way I live because the way that you change the way you live. You're welcome to live your life as you choose. But I'm not going to alter my behavior because you have adopted a narrative that I don't agree with. That's not freedom for me. If I have to go along with the delusions of yourself, then that's not freedom for either one of us. If your freedom is conditional on my approval, then neither one of us are free. I think it's important to understand. But again, you live your life as you choose, but also understand that living life recklessly has consequences. And I'm speaking from experience. I didn't read that in a book. I didn't watch a movie. I didn't take a class. I just went out there and wrecked my life when I was 19 years of age. And so when I sit here and tell you that these next few years can be very challenging, but also very rewarding for you, I'm telling you based on my own experience. And so I want you guys to have a great experience. I want you to look back one day and say, I'm so glad I went to Mississippi State, had a great time there, had some amazing professors. And I'm going to tell you this, some of your favorite professors you'll appreciate later in life. You may not appreciate them in the moment, but as you get a little bit older and you say, you know what, I really appreciate this person because they forced me to think for myself. That's an incredible lesson that we learn in young adulthood. I'll tell you, there was a young lady at Jones named Miss Carolyn Norris. And some of you may know her. If you're from the Jones County area, I'm sure she's passed along by now. You know, that was all way back in fall of 1990. And I remember when I turned in a paper one day, and I just kind of put a half-hearted effort into it, but it was good enough. And I probably should have been given an A. But she didn't give me an A. I think she gave me a B minus for grammar and an F for content. And she made me rewrite the paper. And so when I got that paper back, I was really, really angry because I knew that it was better than most of my peers. We all had to get up and read our class and our paper in class. I knew that mine was better, but I got the worst grade. And it made me angry. But I am an author today because of that moment, because of what she said afterwards. Miss Carolyn Norris pulled me aside with tears in her eyes and said, I will accept this from them. I will not accept this from you. And I was like, well, I don't want to be treated differently. She says, you're going to be treated differently because you have talent. And to whom much is given, much is required. And she said, you probably wrote this in your class before you got here. And I don't think you put your best effort into it. And she said, I'm going to give you an opportunity to rewrite this paper, and I will change your grade. And I don't even remember what I made on the revisionist paper. I know that it was a passing grade. But she told me then, she said, this is the standard that I want you to always uphold. And I didn't like it at the time. It's like, wait, well, this person over here, they can't even write, and they got a B plus, so they got an A minus. And she said, Steve, life isn't fair. And she said, I'm not going to let you sit around here and waste your gift just kind of putting a half-measured effort together. It changed my life. Not in that moment, but as I got it changed my line of thinking. It's like, I'm not going to be able to just kind of BS her. And there were a lot of teachers in my life I could just BS, and that's not to be critical of them. Teachers have enough going on, and when you got to navigate through hundreds of papers from hundreds of students, a lot of times you're just trying to get through it and get grades reported and get the feedback back to the students. But this teacher Miss Carolyn Norris took a special interest in me. I only had her for one semester because I left Jones to go pursue my, you know, musical dreams, you know. But I had her for one semester, and here we are now, you know, goodness, 34 years later, talking about her. You're going to have some professors and some instructors and some TAs that are going to challenge you in a similar way. And you're going to look back in adulthood, and you're going to wonder one day, how did we get here? And you're like, oh, well, here's the pivot point back here. Here's when I began to get serious about what I really wanted to do in the world. And so you want to know why I've written 7 books? A lot of it stems back to that little fork in the road in Ellisville, Mississippi. Finally, they're going to be, well, I guess not finally. I got one more thing I want to say after that. I have been to college, and back in those days, we didn't have cellular phones or emails or text messages. I'm from the 1900s. We didn't have any of that stuff. And so we had to make collect calls home, and we had, I was in dorm 2 in Jones County, and on the second floor, and we had one pay phone for the entire floor, and everybody had to kind of take turns using the phone. You call home, hey, mom, send money. But I know what that call meant to them, and I didn't appreciate it as much then as I do now. You know, I love hearing from my children, and thankfully we have a fam chat, and we're all in there every day, so everybody kind of comments, and so I know that everybody's okay. And I can tell you, your parents right now, even though they just dropped you off, they are on pins and needles waiting to hear from you. Now, many of you will have moms like mine, or moms like my stepmother, who I love, but when my youngest sister Reagan went to college, you know, they couldn't stay in contact enough with her. And I think you got to cut the apron strings, you do. But I can tell you that your parents right now, mainly mom, but dad too, don't think he doesn't miss you. He does. He just doesn't share it and articulate it the way mom does. Any text or call they get from you kind of resets the anxiety meter. Because they're worried. And they're worried for the right reasons. And it's not doubt in you. It's the fact that they've let you out of the, you know, you've left the nest. And now you're having to kind of navigate and figure out life in many respects on your own. And it's not that they don't think that you're ready. They just want to make sure. And so, hey, maybe when you get up in the morning, because you know, I can tell you when you start classes, mom especially is going to be worried. Oh my gosh, they had that 8 o'clock class. I hope they got up. If you don't want mom calling and texting you every morning to make sure you get up, then you need to be the first one to text. Kind of let them know. And then maybe when you get home in the evening, maybe just text them both and say, hey, I'm done. Had a great day today. Hope you guys are good. I love you. I can't tell you what that means to them. And they don't have the words to tell you either because they want you to know that they're okay. But let me tell you, there's a part of them it's not okay. Because you're growing up, you know? And you got to think, for at least 18 years, you've been there. They've been the ones that have been taking care of you, the ones that make your meals and buy your clothes and go get the oil change in your car and things of that nature. They're the ones that have had to kind of do all that. And it's not that they're afraid that you're going to fail, but something in their life that they have held dear for nearly 20 years is missing. So please be sensitive to that too, right? A relationship requires effort on both sides. And so I encourage you, and if you are a parent, maybe get your kid, at least send them to say, listen to this. They probably won't, but mom and dad love you, and they're proud of you. They are. They're proud of you, and they're excited for you. And I remember when we took Ani to school, and yeah, he was getting a chance to play college baseball, and I was so incredibly pumped for him. I was so excited for him. I am the only one that didn't cry. I had to lead a procession of tears back to the minivan as his sisters and his mother and his younger brother all cried. And I didn't have to fight back tears because I was so excited. I knew he was getting to live his dream. And I was not the least bit worried about him being prepared to take care of himself. I wasn't. But what's interesting is when I got home, I missed him a whole lot more than I thought. Because again, for those 18 years, you know, I've always been there. I'd been his soccer coach. I'd been his TKD, his Taekwondo ring coach. I'd coached him in baseball, you know. And so that I had to mourn the loss of that in my own life, and it was very difficult. It was. But I thought, you know what, all of that brought us here to the opportunity to play college baseball. And I knew once he went to Williams and he was 9 hours away from Baton Rouge that it was going to be easy for me to get the family to relocate to Starkville. So there we go. But as always, you know, love one another. Truly, love one another. Because you're going to need your parents. One day we're not going to be here. You know, I don't harp on that with my children, but it's one of the things that I bring up. It's like, everything changes. It won't always be this way, good, bad, or indifferent. The only constant in life is change, and you're about to experience some of that, and it should be a very good change for you. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. I love the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Friends of mine have stayed there. I've been out and toured the property. A lot of great things out there. It's the old renovated clubhouse at the old country club, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. Very convenient. You can do your tailgating right there. And so if you're looking for a weekend retreat, looking for a place maybe to bring a work crew to town, rather than go out there and get 5 hotel rooms and you never know where Bob is, you don't have to go down to that lounge and have people interloping in your conversation. You can have some privacy, and sometimes that's the better part of kind of getting away. It's just kind of having time with yourself and times with people you care the most about. Whether it's a couple's weekend or a family weekend, they can accommodate you. 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, the great back porch area. I cannot oversell that. Sit out there, have an adult beverage, watch a sunset, maybe go get the fire going, continue the conversation out there around the fire pit. Full service kitchen, so you can go to one of our local grocers and stock up and just cook right there. Wet bar, if you want to enjoy an adult beverage. A lot of great things you can do at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, let me encourage you to Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page is going to pop up, and you can peruse to find amenities that are available to you there. Also, some booking options are going to appear too. You can book through Airbnb and VRBO. Maybe you've got a credit. Maybe you just like to do business that way. That's fine. But if you want to save a few bucks, book through the Evolve website with promo code BSR10. BSR10 gets you 10% off your stay. Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right, we're going to do another opponent preview, working through these. And, of course, we'll revisit them on game week as they come up on our schedule. But, guys, we're getting to it, right? You know, we talked about Arkansas over the weekend. We're going to play UMass, and it seems like we have played UMass a lot. Is it just me? Am I the only one that feels that way? Maybe you guys see it differently. It feels like that UMass has been a regular non-conference opponent for us for about 10 years now. That's how it feels. And again, we will get more in-depth with who they are and what they're about, but we only played them twice. This will be our third time. We played them back in 16 and 17. And you may recall, back in 16, we played them in Foxborough, you know, the home of the New England Patriots. Many of you made that trip. We won that game 47-35. It proved to be a lot more difficult than we hoped. The following year, they came to Starkville. We beat them 34-23. The big play in that ball game, it was a interception return for touchdown by JT Gray. But they hung in there with us for a little bit. Now, last year was a tough year for the Minutemen. They went 3-9. Opened up, though, with a 41-30 win at New Mexico State down in Las Cruces, New Mexico. You know my feelings about that state. I don't think it really is land of enchantment, but I digress. 41-30 winners in game one. Felt good about life and said, hey, we got some cool things going. The next week, they got crushed by Auburn 59-14 on the Plains. Miami of Ohio was their week 3 opponent. They lose that game 41-28. Eastern Michigan, the Fighting Scott Weatherbys, 19-17 and a bit of a nail biter. Losing streak continues as they play the Lobos of University of New Mexico. Now think about that for a second, right? Pretty nuts. UMass playing both Division I football programs in the state of New Mexico in the same year. They lose that game in overtime. Competitive, but they lose it. They host Arkansas State the next week and drop that game 52-28. And then the Rockets of Toledo, they head into Amherst and they win 41-24. Well, then UMass traveled to Penn State, who was ranked fifth in the country at the time, and the Nittany Lions absolutely destroyed them in Happy Valley 63-0. The schnod ends, finally, ironically, in a road game at Army, West Point, New York. They win that game 21-14. Pretty crazy stuff when you think about that. They had a seven-game losing streak. Again, they open up 1-0, then lose seven in a row. I mean, the year's over. And give this coaching staff some credit because it could have very easily just, you know, you could have just played out the string and been done with it. But they get Army. The next week, they get Merrimack, 31-21. So now all of a sudden, we've got a winning streak. We've won three games now, 3-7. And they go to Liberty and lose in Lynchburg, Virginia, to Jamie Chadwell and those guys who put together a perfect season. And I'd like to take this time to remind you again that his candidacy as your next football coach was over basically the first day of the search. Even though there were some people involved that were hoping to kind of get him to reconsider when the year went final for them. But his candidacy, according to some, was completely overblown. And that's something that I'm never going to move on from. I'm just not. But Liberty wins that game 49-25. The season ends with a 31-18 loss to UConn. You know, UMass and UConn kind of rival schools there. But, yeah, kind of a tough year, 3-9. And, again, in the middle of that, a seven-game losing streak. Pretty brutal, man. All right, so they're going to open up in Amherst against Eastern Michigan, a team that they probably feel like they should have beat a year ago. Then they get Toledo. They make the return trip out to Toledo. Then they're at Buffalo and then Central Connecticut State. Miami of Ohio, they'll play the Redhawks there, NIU in DeKalb, Illinois, and then they get Missouri, their first SEC opponent of the year, and Mizzou's making the trip to Amherst. Interesting. They get Wagner the next week, and then they travel to Mississippi State, and so we're going to get them. They're going to buy an open date after Missouri, so they'll play Wagner and then us. And really, in many respects, you think, well, season's probably going to be over by then. Should be a game that we win. After us, they'll host Liberty, and then they travel to Georgia. So three SEC opponents on the schedule this year, and then finish up with the big rivalry game at UConn, or excuse me, against UConn in Amherst. But, yeah, nobody's expecting a big year from these guys. You know, it is what it is, but it's interesting. You know, three SEC games, that's three big checks that they'll have an opportunity to cash. Don't think anybody's expecting them to win those games, but certainly a game that we should win. And let's kind of work through this here and kind of look at their numbers, you know, from last year. And, you know, the transfer portal, you know, we talk about the things that we have to deal with. I can't begin to imagine, you know, a team like UMass having to work through the portal. Last year, they averaged just over 23 points a game, allowed nearly 38. They struggled in every aspect of offense. They earned 215 first downs, allowed 262. They ran for 1,706 yards, allowed 2,650, nearly outrushed by 1,000 yards. That is not a recipe for success. They did outthrow their opponents. 2,569 yards passing against 2,474, and a lot of that's got to do with so many of those games being lopsided. And certainly, you know, if you're Penn State, you're just going to line up and run the football. Offensively, 4,275 yards. Collectively, they allowed 5,124. So outgained by nearly 1,000 yards. Not great, as you say. They actually punted it pretty good, right? Right at 40 yards. Allowed about 40 yards, too, you know. You can't impact that much without a little bit of rush. But I guess they had a lot of practice punting. They punted 57 times last year and only forced 37 punts. So pretty proficient in that respect. But didn't do a great job covering that. But as far as the ball carries, pretty good. They also kicked themselves over and over again. About 71 yards in penalties. 96 on the year. Their opponents committed to 76. 36% conversion rate on third down, 55 of 151. They allowed 45% conversion ratio defensively on third down. Fourth down conversions, they were 3 of 13, allowed 7 of 15. So possession plays, not a great thing for the UMass defense. Interesting stuff, right? And it's one of those things, too, you start working through this, you know, what everybody else has and what they expect. But Kayron Adams was the straw that stirred the drink for them last year. Ran for 1,157 yards and 12 touchdowns, nearly 100 yards a game, right at 96. Gregory Desrosiers, I may have said that incorrectly, I'm sure that I did, or Desrosiers, 301 yards. So it was really kind of a one-man show on the ground for them. Look at the passing aspect of things. Man, this is tough here. I'm gonna do my best, but it's Tyson Fomachany. Maybe I'm close there. Phomachanh. Tyson Fomachany. I don't know. There's no I there at the end, Steve, so it's not Chani. But Tyson. Anyway, I'm not gonna try it again. Carlos Davis also was a part of that too, but Tyson was 139 to 27, threw 6 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. And that's the thing you start looking at. You know, they threw for a lot of yards. I say a lot of yards. They threw for more than they rushed for. Right at 61% completion percentage. They did have 3 guys that took snaps for them last year. And 11 interceptions against 14 touchdowns of the team. Not great. Anthony Simpson led the team with 57 grabs for 792 yards. George Johnson, second, kind of a distant second with 35. Mark Pope with 33. But not a great year by any stretch. And those statistics clearly kind of make it look like they were a team that won 3 games, right? I mean, that's just, you know, the devil's in the details. Yeah, and there's a lot of fire and brimstone in Amherst last year. Pretty incredible stuff. And we're getting them at a good time in our schedule. But yeah, you know, real quickly here, we'll take a look at the portal. They had 30 transfers show up this year, which is a lot. They had 23 leave, including Greg Desrosiers. We talked about him. He heads to Memphis. Kayron Adams, a leading rusher, headed to Michigan State. So their top 2 rushers are gone. Marcus Bradley, we talked about him. He's headed to Arkansas State on the defensive line. Pardon me, we didn't talk about him. But interesting, he was ranked pretty high as a transfer, which makes you wonder, why did he go to Arkansas State? Perhaps something's wrong in the rankings. But yeah, obviously some of their better players from last year's team have moved on to other pastures. But, you know, looking at the guys coming in, you know, there's not a lot here you look at. Benjamin Roy or Wah, depending on where you're from. Interior offensive lineman came in from UCLA. That seems to be a pretty good get. Don't know his history, but he's coming in from a Power 5 program. But by and large, most of their transfers, you know, are from G5 type programs. But there are a handful. You know, a couple guys that came in from Georgia Tech, and Ryan Barnes, a cornerback from Notre Dame. You know, you don't get to Notre Dame by being a scrub high school football player. But yeah, they got a good variety here. You know, Frank Ladson Jr. transfers from Miami to UMass. That's interesting. Got a kid from Cal, Wake Forest. So, you know, it's a mixed bag here as far as these transfers go. I mean, they even had a couple guys come in from Dartmouth. I would say it's probably 50-50 with the Power Five. Sam Starich was a walk-on at Michigan and has an opportunity at UMass now. So we'll see how things go. But, you know, it's one of these deals where you look at and you begin to think, you know, we've got an opportunity here to pick up a win. And we're going to need everyone we can get. You know, we're not in a situation where we can afford to overlook anybody. I just don't think these guys are going to be able to have the talent to run with us, transfers or not. But, you know, they're doing their best to kind of rebuild a program up there. And it's so interesting, you know, how life works. You know, the fact that we see these guys, you know, we had never played them before. We're going to see them three times in less than a decade. Always interesting. But Don Brown, the head coach there now in his second season, I guess last year was the second season, he is 4-20 in 2 years. 4-20. Not great. Not great. But this is a guy who's been around a long time. They are not part of a conference, of course. And you may recall that Don Brown was mentioned is being a guy that may have come with Joe Moorhead to be the defensive coordinator at Mississippi State. And then that was reported to me the same night that we find out Joe Moorhead has accepted the job, that Don Brown may be coming with him. And that rumor was quickly squashed and obviously went a different direction. But, yeah, certainly should win this game. And, you know, we got to get six to get bowl eligible. I look forward to a day when we're not just kind of counting that, right? We're not just saying, hey, we got to get to six. You know, I want to get in a playoff. You know, I want to regularly play in Florida bowl games like all of you do. And so I think it's important for everybody to kind of understand we're just kind of laying the foundation for future success. Making a bowl game should be a given for Mississippi State and really any program in the Southeastern Conference. It should be a given that we make a bowl game. But I don't just want to make bowl games. I want to go to exotic locales and play meaningful games and have an opportunity to finish up in the top 25 AP poll on a regular basis. I know you guys have the same dreams and aspirations that I do. But I don't ever want us to just be satisfied saying, well, we went to a bowl game. That's just not enough. Again, even in – I think Dan Mullen showed us that even in a rebuilding year, we should be in a Tennessee bowl game, you know, whether it be Music City or Liberty. I mean, that should be the floor for our program. And that's kind of where we are right now, is trying to go up and raise expectations. This year, we're just kind of getting our legs under us a little bit. I still think that Levy will find a way to upset somebody. Don't know who it's going to be, but I still think that's probably the case. I expect us to get out of the gate pretty strong, but that UMass game is going to be one that we're going to have down the stretch to ensure that we have an opportunity to get bowl eligible. And that's the thing, when I go back and look at all that, guys, that could be the one, right? That could be the game that is kind of the difference between, you know, making a bowl game and not. You know, when you think about where that thing lies on our schedule, and I'm pulling it back up right now, you know, that may be the last game we win in a regular season. And I'm not trying to be all doom and gloom. I'm just trying to paint you a realistic picture. You know, I expect us to win all four of these non-conference games, with Arizona State being the most difficult. And Toledo won't be a joke either. But when you get down here to UMass, that's November the 2nd, and what you have left is a road trip to Tennessee, a home game against Missouri, and then the battle for the Golden Egg. And at this point, all three of those teams currently ranked in, what, top 15? Yeah, so, you know, we never know what we're going to look like by the time we get there, but that's the thing about that UMass game. You win that one, and you're bowl eligible, and you're kind of playing with house money. So I think what you could see here is maybe your Bulldog team get over that hump and say, hey, we didn't get to go to a bowl game last year. We've achieved that now. And then you can kind of play with house money down the stretch and play for bowl positioning. But, yeah, you look at those last three. I mean, State's not going to be favored in those three games. You know, two of those three on the road in the Southeastern Conference. And so – I just share that with you because I know a lot of people just kind of go ahead and look at that and pencil in a win, and I'm penciling one and two. But it may be the last regular season win for Mississippi State. And I hate to be to sound so negative, but that's just kind of the reality of this situation. Guys, if you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com and you can pre-order the book. And just wait now on a release date. And, of course, I don't know if you guys know this, the book is going to be nominated for some awards. Looking forward to some early reviews and that kind of stuff. I'm really excited about the book. You're going to learn a lot about Mississippi State. And I'll tell you, one of the things that – and I said this to my agent earlier today. So I think one of the things about this is that it is evident when you look at our ancient history is that we are a university that has always kind of prioritized baseball. We've been a baseball school that loved football. And we've been very fair-weathered about basketball. And that's – people don't want to hear that, but it's true. Outside of the Babe McCarthy era, and we hadn't had a ton of success. And you get into the modern era, and of course Richard Williams did some amazing things. It takes us to the Final Four. Stansberry, of course, had a great run here too. But you know, by and large, our basketball tradition has been very limited. And you would think, hey, you know, it's a smaller roster, and playing basketball is the most inexpensive sport there is, right? You don't have to do a ton. You don't have to have grounds crew out there. It's a smaller roster. You just need to make sure that the goals are affixed and the basketball is inflated. It's not that expensive to play that game. And nowadays, it's a much different dynamic when you factor in NIL and these salaries and things like that. But, you know, historically, it was the most inexpensive and probably the easiest revenue sport that we had. But we just didn't have a lot of basketball tradition. We didn't. And I know some people don't want to hear that, but that's the reality of it. And you'll read in the Dude, you know, after the Bilbo purge with all the craziness that happened, you know, we fielded a football team. We fielded a baseball team. We didn't field a men's basketball team. We didn't. Something had to give, and it was basketball. And I know there's some people out there that feel like basketball should be a much higher priority for us. And I think in recent years it has been. And I think you're attraction to the sport. I mean, I think last year, I mean, how many of those games down the stretch on weekends could you find a ticket for? I mean, it was great. Our fans were coming out, you know. And so you're going to read about some of that, kind of read the disconnect in some respects. And a reminder, as always, come float with us. People ask me all the time, Steve, why do you float? I'm going to go float today. I had to carry the bags all around San Antonio after we checked out of the hotel, and like a dummy, I went and, you know, toured the Alamo with my luggage with me. But yeah, I gotta go float. But mainly it's, you know, it's not just a physical recovery, which that is always a valuable part, but for me it's like the anxiety. It allows me a chance to just kind of relax, let my mind be quiet for a while. And maybe you're a person like me, like as soon as my eyes spring open in the morning, I'm just going a million miles an hour. And sometimes being able to just go get a bit of a mental reset is a great value to me. Maybe we can help you too. If you got chronic pain or chronic anxiety, coming and floating with us could be a big thing. And of course, let me plan ahead. I know many of you like, hey, I don't live in the greater Starkville area, but Steve, I want to support you and Dana, but I also want to come experience the joy of floating. If you're coming for game day weekends, you need to book ahead of time. You have to have an appointment. You know, right now, you know, we're steady. And some days really busy, but you know, you can call the day of and usually get in. We're already starting to see people that are planning, you know, like booking for Eastern Kentucky weekend. You know, people from out of state. And you can do that. You can go online. You can download the app at TrueRest. You can download the app from the App Store, the TrueRest app, and you can book online. Or you can go to the website, TrueRest.com, or you can just call Dana at 662-268-7601. And she can get you scheduled. And so that's all important. We make it as easy for you as we can. But I have people ask me all the time, Steve, how are things going? Things are going good. Things are going really good. Just open 6 months now. Yeah, 6 months. A lot of times if I want to see her, I got to go up there. But hey, she's happy. I'm happy. And it's usually just me and the dogs around here. And that's why I get out here and talk to you, right? So I can have some human interaction. But hey, thank you guys so much for all the support. Come be a part of our great band of maroon misfits over at jeanspage.com. As always, we make all the big room content for free. So even if you're not a subscriber, you can enjoy the content about your team You can watch the press conferences, videos of that. You can read transcriptions of the press conference and all of our features and a lot of recruiting information here as of late. I'll get a chance tomorrow to sit down with Jay Gautreaux, Mississippi State hitting coach, and we'll begin to kind of wrap up our baseball coverage for the summer and begin to kind of get ready for fall baseball. It'll be probably late September, early October. So, you know, you won't see a lot of baseball features for a while. It doesn't mean that we're not paying attention. There's not going to be as much news to report. And to be honest with you, I think everybody needs a bit of to take a breath, right? Because it feels like for 6 months we have been wide open on baseball, whether it be, you know, covering the team, covering, you know, the tournament, hoping that we host and breaking all that stuff down. And then as soon as we get back, we got to go right to working on the portal. Then there's a draft. It's been 6 months, pretty extensive baseball coverage, and we cover Mississippi State baseball like nobody ever has, and I'll put that up against anybody, and that's not a matter of opinion. I got the receipts to back that up, so you be sure and come check out with us. But football coverage, of course, we're doing reports today, right? We're not like we don't squirrel stories away. So like if we have three players come to the podium tomorrow, those stories are going to be up by end of day, because I never know what the next day is going to bring. You start putting those stories back and somebody else has put theirs up before yours, then yours are stale, right? And so you can believe that when we have, during camp, when we have morning media opportunities, we're going to have that content up for you same day. But I believe in doing today's work today. That's how I feel. Let's get out of here. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.